there were lots of things for startups, there's lots of things for code, there's lots of things for exits and IPOs and venture funding and all sorts of things. But you know, he felt that there really wasn't something that helped him answer the question, how do I understand what a good business is? And how do I go about building one? And you know, I suppose the rest is history there.
Welcome to the PeopleStack podcast, where we discuss the intersection of people, work, and technology. I'm your host, Jen Bunk, founder of Jen Bunk Ventures and architect of the PeopleStack. My guest for this episode is Mark Littlewood. He is CEO of Business of Software. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Jen. I'm a delight to be here, and I'm excited about this. We met last year at our Boston conference, and I've been really impressed with all of the stuff that you've been doing, and I love the podcast. So an honor to be on it.
Oh, thank you so much, Mark. And the feeling is certainly mutual. I am super excited to chat today and finally find out all about Business of Software, what's changed over the years, how you approach Business of Software stuff. So let's dive right in. And for those folks who may not be familiar with the Business of Software Conference, or for those who might want to learn a little bit more about it, why don't we start there? So tell us about Business of Software and what your core mission is as CEO.
Sure. So Business of Software is a conference in the US. We run a conference in Europe and a series of other events. Our mission is to help people who care about building great software get better at building great software and building great software companies. The content that we cover, we believe that there are lots and lots of really great events and conferences and educational opportunities for people to talk about code and learn about code. There's lots of stuff about investment, but the other things, the culture, the product marketing, the sales, how all the different bits of the moving parts of a company fit together are where we really kind of come in and help. The biggest kind of group of people that come to the event are probably technical CEO founders of software companies that have grown to a certain point, and then the founder CEO has looked around a room, there's 50 people there, they're all working for them, and they go, I need to get a bit grown up and I need to learn about how to run a business, because I started out doing code and now I'm a business person, and how do I go about understanding all the bits and how they fit together. So that's what we do. My mission as CEO obviously is to help our team deliver on the things that they want to do, but also really guide and steer the event program that we have so that we can maximize the value that we can generate for entrepreneurs and other people in the ecosystem when we hold events. And we try, you know, we're very, very aware that there are lots and lots of draws on busy people's time. So the events that we do by design are built to be high density, lots and lots of good value, lots and lots of good people, and lots of opportunities for people to talk to each other and share ideas. Because the big secret about event businesses is often it's not even the content that you put on stage that makes the difference between an okay event and an event. It's the people in the room.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I want to talk about that a little bit more, the people in the room, because last year was my first experience going to the Business of Software Conference in Boston last year. And I was, so a little bit of context. I've been to a lot of conferences. I'm a former academic. So one of the things that academics do a lot is go to conferences. and so some of them are great. Some of them are not so great. Some of them were terrible. But Business of Software was one of those conferences that I will always remember, and I will always make it a high priority in terms of making it to it every year, not just because it's in Boston and it's close for me. Even if it was halfway around the world, I would, you know, do my best to get there, because exactly what you said, that it was the people in the room. And not just the speakers. Blown away by the speakers, how engaging they were, how diverse the different speakers were. But also just the feeling of, you know, sitting there in the room with everyone, the chances to, you know, to meet people over lunch or during the networking stuff. It just felt like this big family. And so that's really what made it an awesome experience for me. And so I wonder if you can kind of go under the hood a little bit and talk about, let's just start with the curation of speakers. You know, do you have a process for figuring out, you know, who's going to be a good speaker? How do we know if they're going to be engaging in that whole process? Because I know it's not easy to do, because like I said, I've been to bad conferences. So when it's done really, really well, I'm always curious, you know, what's going on under the hood there?
Well, firstly, thank you for that extremely extremely kind advert you could do our marketing. No, it's really, I you know, really appreciate you sharing that. It's great to hear that some of the things that we put quite a lot of time into thinking about are working. So let's start with the speakers. I think there are a number of ways that we find speakers and speakers find us. We have about 500 or so applications to speak every year, and we have a very small conference. Business of Software US is run over 2.5 days, and my job is really to curate a series of 15 talks, that's 15, over 2.5 days, mm-hmm. in a single track conference that will A, keep people engaged, and you know, those talks need to be interesting and engaging. They also need to be the kind of talk that, you know, not just inspires someone and makes them feel think grand thoughts, but actually leaves them with a few concrete things that they can take back to put to work in their business or think about as they go about their business. So there are a couple of ways. So we have a lot of inbound speaking applications, and there's a range of people that apply from sort of startups through to venture capital firms, to people in large organizations, entrepreneurs, academics, commentators, all sorts of things. And we also have a very good network of referrals. So a number of speakers, a number of long-term attendees have been very generous and very helpful in getting in touch with us when they come across someone that they think is really, really interesting. Mm-hmm. And we look at all of those things, and we try and pull together a set of talks that is interesting and engaging, mm-hmm. contain what I call texture. If every talk you have is very big vision and lots of lovely images and short sort of sound bites and things, mm-hmm. at the end of the day you kind of feel a bit bombarded. And so you want some speakers that are quite loud and outgoing and charismatic, and you want some people that are a little bit quieter, and people have different styles of presenting as well. So mm-hmm. Pulling a group of people together that can do that is the mission, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Because it's a single track, we want to make sure that people have something in common that they can talk about during the breaks. As I say, we have a very kind of high demand for those speaking slots. And do I always get the single best person to fill each slot? I think the answer is, very honestly, no. Because I think you get to a point where best can have so many inputs, and there are so many variables that go into making what best means, that what we're really trying to do is find people who, as a basic kind of hygiene factor, can present and can talk and are excellent presenters. And then there is a sort of a slight luck of the draw thing in terms of if we have four incredible speakers around conversion rate optimization, that won't work for us because we need to kind of keep an eye on all of the other elements in the thing. That being said, you know, we keep in touch with a lot of people, and you know, it's quite often people will apply, or they'll then come to the conference if they don't get to speak. They'll get engaged in the community and, you know, come back and suggest other things. And so we're always open to working with people on that basis. We have a little acronym that we use, and we've blogged about this in the past, because everyone needs a good acronym. So mm-hmm. when we're looking at speakers and thinking about fit, I think there's four things that we consider, and the acronym is CARE, C-A-R-E, and the C stands for content. And that for me is, can someone engage an audience? I want to be able to see talks that people have done where you see how they interact with people, how they deliver something, and do they have great core content at the heart of what they're doing. So, you know, that's our absolute kind of bench, that's our base level thing. The A in CARE is authority. Does someone need to tell you why they have authority, or do they have authority because they stand up and they obviously have authority? There's nothing wrong with someone saying, you know, this is what I've done. But, you know, when someone like Dharmesh stands up and is talking, so Dharmesh Shah at HubSpot, he's mm-hmm. founded a number of companies, been incredibly successful. He doesn't really need to say who he is and what he's doing, because his track record sits there and smacks of, this guy's learned stuff. And so, you know, you don't need to explain it. And it means that you have a higher degree of resonance with the audience. The other thing there, I think, for our organization and our attendees is, as a lot of them are founders, CEOs, emerging leaders in growing software companies, they quite often value the experience of an individual over the experience of a professional who is seeing more of something. And let's use corporate finance as an example. There are some excellent corporate finance professionals, advisors, who they might do 10 deals a year, they might do 200 deals, they might do even more in some cases as a firm. And so they see a series of transactions, and there's probably nobody better placed, if you're doing a couple of hundred deals a year, to make very intelligent comments and give a very intelligent overview and analysis of the market and what's interesting and what kind of companies buy other companies and what gets in the way and what makes that process simpler. And that is really very, very valuable stuff. Yeah. But for our audience, actually, it's often the experience of an individual entrepreneur who has gone through the process of selling a company that resonates more. And so that seems to have more authority because it's come from the person that is the victim, if you like, has got the skin in the game. Mm-hmm. So that's, I mean, that's, I suppose, one of those other things about authority. The R in CARE is reach, and reach for us is, if we're working with a speaker, if we have a speaker who's involved, how are they, you know, what channels do they have to let people know about what we're doing?
Okay.
That might be something like it's partly around social media and people's online presence. It might be connections to other organizations. It might be connections to other networks of people. And as an event organizer, you want to sell tickets for your event. You can't do it all yourself. And so it's always nice when speakers have an audience that overlaps with yours but isn't necessarily the same, and maybe mm-hmm. you can see ways of doing things together to raise awareness about the event. And then the E of care, the final letter, is engagement. Mm-hmm. We have a huge number of applications to speak, as I said. And they range from things that are obviously slightly badly mass emailed. So I've had emails to "Dear Mr. Business of, I'm available to speak at your event," or "Dear Mark, I've loved TechCrunch Disrupt for 5 years and would like to work with you." I mean, that's sort of one end, and it's hard to. I mean, we respond to everyone. It's hard to sort of work out how those sorts of things come in. Mm-hmm. At the other end, and I think one of the things that makes a massive difference for us when we're talking to speakers, just because I think as you've said yourself, the event is slightly unusual in the way that it's set up. It's less commercial. We don't have panel discussions. We don't have sales presentations. The speakers aren't launching products. They're generally talking about the problems and the challenges they've had. It's quite hard if you haven't been to the event to really understand how different that is and how different it makes it. So, certainly if people are applying to speak, one of the things that we would look at is whether they have been before, and whether their if their content is interesting, that's always good. But we tend to like working with organizations and people that have had some kind of engagement with the community, either as attendees or they can at least demonstrate that they understand the format for the event. We're not doing panels, so the sort of "I've loved business software forever, I've always wanted to come and I'd like to apply for a panel," mm-hmm. kind of says to me, "I'm just applying to this, but I haven't actually worked out that you don't do panels," and it's probably less engaged than some of the people that have sort of spent a bit more time kind of really thinking about what they know and how it relates back to other people.
Yeah.
Great example, actually, this year for our speakers. We have two of the most delightful non-identical twins you will ever meet. So this is Shane and Sean from PDQ. Mm-hmm. And their names are similar, actually. The story was their dad hadn't, or their parents hadn't realized they were having twins. And so they'd settled on the name. And then when two popped out, they were like, "Oh, we need another name." And Shane and Sean sort of was close enough. Now, they've been every year, I think, since 2010, and bring a kind of a core team mm-hmm. along. And they came to us last year in the US and said, "I think we might have something to say." And they are fabulous people, real interesting, engaged, very thoughtful, very funny, very entertaining people. And we sort of sat down and kind of came up with an idea which I think is going to be a real, it'll be a real surprise for people, because they're not necessarily names themselves.
Sure.
They might be relatively unknown, but the amount of thought and effort they've put into pulling something together that makes sense is very impressive.
I wonder if it's the case that if you have people who eventually become speakers who are longtime Business of Software attendees, like, oh, I've gone to the conference for 4 years, 5 years in a row, and I've been soaking up all the content, I've been soaking up the atmosphere, and I have this great idea for a talk. Does that happen?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that's the Sean and Shane story in a nutshell. And there are a few others like that as well. So there's a company based down in North Carolina, where obviously there are no software companies. There are software companies everywhere, by the way. That was my English sarcasm kicking in. So company called Precision Lender, which provides decision-making tools to commercial lending banks, and again, Carl, the CEO founder, has attended, I think, probably about 10 years now. Has always had interesting things to say. Has never put himself forward as a speaker. A couple of the other exec team people that came along have sort of said couple of times, you should get Carl to speak. We again sat down and talked about what he was thinking about, and turns out he's not just an exceptional CEO in terms of he's a very, very committed learner and a thinker, and is constantly sort of thinking about new ideas and ways of building them into the business. He's been thinking about artificial intelligence for a long time. And how that can be incorporated into the Precision Lender offering. He actually has come to a really conclusion a little while back that actually AI in software is a good thing, but you shouldn't see it as this terrible thing that's going to destroy all the jobs. And think about all of the kind of all of the kind of press and news and thought that noise that's going into the implications for artificial intelligence and what it will do, what it will kill, everything else. He kind of came from a different perspective. He was like, well, actually, what if artificial intelligence is something that isn't about getting rid of jobs? It's about making humans better at what they're good at.
Yes.
So he came over to Europe for the London conference this year in May. And his talk was titled Iron Man Suits, Not Terminators. and it was a fantastic, fantastic talk about product management and product strategy and bringing a new and emerging technology into an existing product suite in a way that really encourages adoption. And I think there's also something quite subtle there about AI, with all of the press attention about AI meaning the end of humanity is nigh. If you have software which is really kind of majoring on having AI within it, there is a degree of resistance from users who feel like they might be pushed out of so there's human resistance to the adoption of AI, whereas this kind of IA or intelligence augmentation, something that's there demonstrably to make humans better. It's not to replace them, it's to do some of the hard tasks, do more of the hard tasks that humans can't do to give humans a better data set and a better set of information to make decisions from.
Yeah. That sounds so, so interesting. And thank you for sharing that. And thank you for sharing the care metaphor, the content authority, reach, and engagement that is super helpful from many perspectives. First, just from the perspective of how do you run business of software? How do you decide who's going to be those 15 out of the 500 or so speakers? But also just in terms of thinking about, somebody was interested in applying for any conference or doing a talk anywhere. or somebody yeah. who's going to be doing a talk and is already, you know, on the docket somewhere. How do I make sure that I make a great talk? And thinking about the CARE is just really great.
Yeah, I hope it is. And it, you know, I think every event has slightly different criteria. I think, you know, for some events will promote themselves and sell themselves as 2 days, 500 speakers, 10,000 attendees.
Sure.
And that's great. That's a way of doing it. But I think the organisers of those types of events may have slightly different frameworks to assess. But mm-hmm. I think anyone that's applying for a talk that can demonstrate those types of things. And, you know, I would never expect everybody that we have as a speaker to score, you know, a 10 nominally on each of the four. You know, that would be lovely, but actually, you know, you might then end up with the same old people, you know, and one of the things that I really, really like doing is kind of going off and finding new people and finding, you know, because we, like so many conferences, have a challenge when it comes to getting speaking applications from obvious demographics.
Sure.
So just to give you a sense of the 500 applicants, certainly less than 80 are female.
Okay. Less than 80, less than 80. Yeah.
So okay. That's, yes.
Okay.
Which is you know, it's less than 20%, and actually I have a, you know, I don't you know, and I will never, you know, don't believe in positive discrimination in so much as, well, these are all the applications, we need to hit some diversity metrics, so I'm going to take the best people I've got here and put them in, because I don't think that works. I don't think that's fair for anyone. What I do is actually think about particular topics and particular themes, and then go out and try and track down really brilliant people that might not have been noticed that can talk to those things and to talk to those ideas. And you know, that gives me, I think I have to kind of actively go out and seek the very best people that I can. And so, yeah, there's always a sort of a trade-off there.
And I appreciate that you brought that up, the diversity piece of it, because one of the things that I noticed, this is a little bit of it's a side anecdote of being at BOS, but I definitely appreciated the diversity of speakers, and having a diverse speakers draws a more diverse audience as well. And one of the things that a few of the women and I were somewhat joking about, but it was actually really very cool to see, is, you know, you go to a lot of tech conferences as a woman, and it comes to be the time where you take a break and you go to the bathroom, and it's like, oh, there's nobody in, you know, normally when women go to the bathroom, we're used to waiting in line, but you go to a tech conference and it's, oh, there's no line, because it's all the guys are waiting in line. But during bathroom breaks at Business of Software, we were actually standing and waiting in line. And we're like, I'm happy to wait in line at a tech conference, because that means that there's more women here.
I'm delighted to hear. I have to say, we completely fix it, because we just lock the doors of the restaurant. It's great to hear. I mean, that's you know, that's a fantastic piece of feedback. Yeah. And I think the sort of, you know, the percentages, the numbers vary, you know, depending on how they're reported and all sorts of things. But, you know, the fact is that, you know, and it's not just women, I think it's, you know, there's diversity of, you know, gender and religion and actually, you know, I mean, sort of some slightly more esoteric things. You know, I think the sort of points of view and perspectives, I think, you know, one of the things that, you know, at a high level, we're very keen to get across with Business Software and the content, is that this shouldn't be an event where every founder is killing it and crushing it and it's all great and boom, how I went from 100K MRR to 2 million ARR or actually finding people that are prepared to talk about the downsides of venture or of entrepreneurship, finding people that are prepared to talk about the mistakes they've made is something that's really important as well. And I think that you often learn far more from hearing about why something didn't go according to plan than you do than when you're talking about the things that were really successful.
Hi everyone, we'll get back to the interview in a jiffy. But first, are you a tech manager? In other words, do you lead teams of geeks through long-term complex projects? Do you feel like you're wasting precious time going to useless meetings, dealing with administrative nonsense, and working late nights? Are you working 50 plus hours a week, but don't have the salary to show for it? It doesn't need to be that way. You can build thriving, high-performing teams who produce a measurable positive impact while earning the premium salary you deserve. Oh, and you don't have to work your butt off to get there. If this sounds like the kind of success you're striving for, then go to genbunk.com/webinar to reserve a spot in my free masterclass. I share the 4 shifts that my tech manager clients made to achieve badass career transformation. That's genbunk.com/webinar. Without further ado, please enjoy the rest of the interview.
Yeah, and speaking of learning from the conference and learning from other people's mistakes and other people's adventures. What I'm curious from your perspective, Mark, so the business software conference has been going on for a while now. It's the 12th BOS conference this coming October in Boston.
And that's correct.
You've been involved in it for the last 7 years, is that right?
Feels a lot longer.
I believe that's what it said on your LinkedIn profile, so that's what I'm going by.
In that case, you are absolutely right, ma'am. I'd attended a couple of times and was friends and still friends with the founder who was actually a guy called Neil Davidson who was one of the 2 co-founders of a company called Redgate, who do .NET developer tools. And the reason that he set the conference up in the first place is that he'd bootstrapped Redgate to about 40 people and started this sort of realization of, responsibility. What do we do? How do we build a great business? And he looked around at all of the events that were out there and there were lots of things for startups. There's lots of things for code. There's lots of things for exits and IPOs and venture funding and all sorts of things. But he felt that there really wasn't something that helped him answer the question: how do I understand what a good business is, and how do I go about building one? And I suppose the rest is history. There, he put a dream team of speakers together and contacted them all, and Redgate's 300 people now and just had its most profitable and successful year ever, I think. So he's doing
That's so wonderful to hear. And so given your experience, so many years with the beginnings of the Business Software Conference and now serving as CEO for many years, I'm curious what you've learned. What has, in terms of the content, in terms of what people are talking about during their talks, in terms of what are the themes that emerge from the conference? What has stayed the same, or perhaps just on the flip side of that, what has changed? What are your thoughts?
Not afraid of throwing out those big questions, are you, Jen?
Absolutely not.
I think if I was a politician, I'd be saying, well, that's a great question. Desperate. Things that are staying the same. Here's a few off the top of my head. One of the things that's fascinating to me is people still want to know how you move from a consulting to a product company. And this is it's classic. I mean, it's sort of fairly inevitable. The dynamics of the two types of company are quite different. A product company requires focused effort and investment to build something that you get out and sell. You build it once and sell many times. And consulting, you go out, you sell something, you build something, you go out, you sell something. You charge a lot more for what you're doing. But the businesses that start out as startups thinking they want to do a product company and end up being a consulting company often end up going down that wormhole, because the consulting is actually making money and the product company is not making money. And you can build quite a substantial consulting business and still not get to your product. So that's certainly, you know, just one, you know, it's not the major thing, but it's one of those things that's remarkably consistent over the years, is that evolutionary path of companies as they grow. I think one of the things that really screams out at me is it's okay to be different. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The crowd isn't necessarily wise. Just because everybody else is doing something, it doesn't make it right. And I think, you know, one of the things that we've done quite well is look at some of the fabulous, fabulous companies like Balsamiq, who is a bootstrapped 40-person profitable remote working business that is doing all sorts of things that would be not necessarily sort of taken out of the they're not from the Silicon Valley playbook. You think about companies like Zapier, who came out of Y Combinator, so far so standard Silicon Valley kind of creation thing. They came out of Y Combinator, got $1 million funding. Mm-hmm. And then the guy moved to Cincinnati and hasn't taken any more funding, but they're 60 million revenue, 160 people, fully remote. Mm-hmm. They don't have an office. So things like that are fascinating. There's a company called Wildbit. It's been going for 17 years now, run by a husband and wife partnership, Chris and Natalie. Mm-hmm. They actually, a year ago, started experimenting with a four-day week. Yeah. Everyone's paid the same, and they're expected to work and be focused in those 4 days. But they wanted to do an experiment to see what happens. And we interviewed Natalie on our podcast. Actually, you should get her. She's great. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. Okay.
To talk about this sort of stuff.
Yep.
And you know, so far, so good. So I think those sorts of people who are going off and doing different things bring fresh, different perspectives. I think other things that kind of come out time and time again, spending money isn't always a solution. And that doesn't matter. That's not a venture capital is not the answer. It's quite easy to throw money at all sorts of problems without really thinking hard enough about what the problems are. And you need to really kind of think about those things. When we were starting, SaaS was this new thing, and it was like, yeah, it's sort of all right for a few kind of segments of the market, but no one in an enterprise organization is ever going to buy SaaS. And, mm-hmm. There isn't an enterprise that isn't SaaS to its eyeballs at the moment. So SaaS is here to stay.
Yes.
No one knows what the new thing is until afterwards. And we see a lot of people talking about ICOs on the blockchain and AI and machine learning, and agents and bots seem to be sort of some of the big things that people are talking about and getting very excited about. But you know, most new technologies, most new ideas go through this hype cycle that calms down after a while. And a lot of the people that are, you know, if you're a self-respecting startup at the moment pitching for funding, you would almost certainly have to say that you have some kind of AI inside you. A lot of those companies don't necessarily know what, you know, really sort of truly understand what it means. So, you know, those sorts of things are always going on. I think the other thing that's really powerful and comes through across, so I think there's two things actually. You know, the two most important things in a company are culture, and you have a culture in your business whether you like it or know it or not. And I think one of the things that has become, you know, talked about a lot more recently is what culture really means. And culture is not a ping pong table or a foosball table or a candy wall. The best description actually of culture I had was from an architect that did a lightning talk a couple of years ago. Mm-hmm. She said, you know, culture is a product of the sum of, it's a product of the behaviors that you encourage minus the behaviors that you actively discourage. And we've had some great talks over the years that there was a guy called Mikey Trafton, who's now CTO at Draft House, the Alamo Draft House, which is a sort of art house cinema chain that runs across the States. And he actually, in 2012, gave a talk about putting a framework around what culture is that I think was the first time for me that someone had really explained this in a way that software people were going, that's it. It's not this soft thing. It's a really important thing. And I can now understand it because I can see this model in my head. So I think, you know, culture is an incredibly important part of what a business is. And then I think, you know, the other thing that, you know, time and time and time and time again, we never move away from is it ain't nothing without people. And people means founders, people means employees, people means the partners and the friends of employees and founders. It means the people in companies that are buying stuff. We had there's a great speaker called Steli Efti, who runs a company called Closio, and this isn't a particular, I just heard this first from him, but you know, his sort of comment was, IBM doesn't buy your software, Bob and Jane in IBM buy your software. And really understanding the motivations of people, the challenges that people have, the ways that you can identify what those challenges are, and how you can meet them, thinking about things like the jobs to be done framework, for example, that give you a really, really interesting framework to ask questions that make sense. And you know, same goes for development of your team and the people in your team. That's not just about looking out for mental health goals and vision and keeping people engaged and, you know, promoting the right people and et cetera, et cetera. It's really, you know, all software companies, whether they like it or not, will rise and fall on how they understand people and the world in which they interact. So I'd say those are some of the kind of constant themes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So helpful, so insightful. I'm glad I asked the big question because that was really, really helpful to hear, especially, you know, the people part, which is a very nice segue into the last question that I want to ask, Mark. We have a few more minutes, and this is the question asked.
Time flew.
It really did when you're having fun. Absolutely. Yeah, it's a good sign. It's a good sign. So the last question that I have, this is the question that I like to ask all of my podcast guests. And you can feel free to interpret this as broadly as you like. And the question is, what is the biggest people-related challenge change in your job?
That's a, again, that's a great question, Jen. Excuse me while I tread water. I think there's two ways I would answer that. I think there's a broad thing for me about how the people-related challenge in my job is we have a community of fantastic people, CEOs, founders, product people, CTOs, and they, I think, you know, they genuinely, I feel like they sort of self-select on many levels. And so we have an incredible wealth of experience and talent and knowledge and insight in the groups or the group of people that comes to BOSS. And going back to the conversation we were having earlier about speakers, you know, we get 500 speakers a year. We have 400 attendees. Most of them are probably in a position to do some really interesting talk, or at the very least will have something that they can contribute to the community. And so I think one of my big challenges is thinking about how we harness that power more effectively, mm-hmm. How we build a community that makes more of that that incredibly talented and very generous group of people. I think, you know, people come to BOSS on listening mode rather than broadcast mode. So much so that sometimes we don't even know, we don't know who someone is because they're the one that kind of comes in and sits in the corner every year. And then you're like, oh my God, you're running this. That's amazing. Why didn't you ever say it? So I didn't think I wanted to, you know, didn't want to show off, whatever. So I think really finding ways that we as an organization can mobilize that community and the ecosystem, which, you know, goes around the world. People from Boston this year will be coming from New Zealand, Australia, Brazil, Argentina, everywhere except Antarctica generally. So that I think on our in terms of the people within the community, and then I think internally we've got to a point where we've got a really, really, really great core team here, and the question is, you know, as they're they've got up to speed and they're really kind of, you know, they know what they're doing, how do we bring more people into our organization so that we can deliver on some of this stuff and make it work? So I don't have the answer to that, so if anyone can help and anyone's got any useful advice or pointers about where I should go and think and read and talk to people, I'm all ears on that one.
Yeah, awesome. Great. Well, thank you for sharing that response, Mark. And thank you for sharing all of your insights and your experience and all of the great examples of the people you've met and the talks at Business of Software. It's been really, really great talking with you today.
Oh, Jen, it's an absolute pleasure. Thank you. Thank you so much. I mean, I'm complete and utter an honor and a privilege to be a part of it. I don't get asked to do these things very much, so thank you for humoring me or entertaining me or inviting me on. Love to help and look forward to seeing you in Boston.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad I asked you to be on the podcast, and the same to you. I look forward to seeing you in Boston in October as well.
Fantastic.